Authorities inside Turkey say at least 28 people were killed, dozens more injured in this Ataturk airport attack.
It reminds me of Orlando. By the time they figured things out, 49 dead. And it doesn't matter who takes credit for this. It's terrorism. And it's, look, we need to have a global war on terror. And the sooner we all realize it, the better.
This is Europe's third biggest airport. And as of right now, that airport is closed. All three terrorists were able to detonate their explosives. And that, of course, maximized the damage.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It is 5:08 and it is Wednesday, June 29th, 2016. And welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day, 5:08. Welcome to another day after a terrorist attack, this time in Turkey, as you've been hearing on WGN from ABC News as well. The main Turkey airport closed in Istanbul. There is a full travel warning now for American citizens heading to that part of the world. And for the business world, it's another day to have a catastrophe, have a disaster looming, have problems looming. I know it sort of belittles the situation, and I don't certainly mean to do that. But again, it's just another world incident that really we have our plate full right now, if I can just say that out loud. And we feel for certainly the people of Turkey. And if you have travel plans to that area, contact the U.S. State Department. Also, be aware of your just travel surroundings now that you're getting ready to head off for your 4th of July Independence Day weekend. Airport security ratcheting up all across the country. We'll continue to follow that as we move through the morning here on 720 WGN. Vic Vaughn will have the latest with news, and then we'll follow that throughout the morning on the Steve Cochran Show. Let's get right to the WGN Market Desk, your overnight global intel from the business world. Asian stock markets rallying today following gains on Wall Street, even bigger gains in Europe. Market worries about the uncertainty of Brexit seem to have eased for now. It's either that or there's a lot of buy-up, cheap stocks out there. Analysts say market volatility could come back at any time, and it's too early to say that the sell-off and that the uncertainty is over. Yesterday, the Dow gained about 269 points. That is good enough for about 2%. The S&P and NASDAQ did the same. European markets saw even bigger gains. Here's what we expect today on the economic calendar. Investors will be looking for word that Americans are continuing to spend heavily. Hopefully they did in May. The Commerce Department releases personal income and spending numbers for the month later this morning. U.S. consumer spending posted its biggest gain in more than 6 years in April. Households purchased more automobiles. The second big economic report due out today comes from the National Association of Realtors, which will release its pending home sales index for May. Both of those reports, all three of those reports, could have significant impacts on the markets as soon as the opening bell rings later on this morning. With Brexit on the minds of many, European Union leaders are continuing their meetings for a second day in Brussels today after the Brexit vote. British Prime Minister David Cameron will not be in attendance. It could take Britain up to 2 years to negotiate an exit plan. And Jean-Claude Juncker, president of the European Commission, the executive branch of the EU, says that is not fast enough.
It has to be speeded up. We don't have months to meditate.
And there's all this rumbling behind the scenes about Article 50, I believe it is, from the EU Charter with Great Britain, and talk about, is there a way out of this for the UK? Most experts say probably not. We'll continue to follow that as well this morning. It was last year sometime when the FCC finally gave phone companies the ability to block robocalls and all kinds of technology developing to stop these calls. Have you gotten one of these lately?
Hi, this is Josh from the customer service department. Can you hear me okay? Okay, great. You have been pre-selected to receive a vacation of one of our all-inclusive promotions, which includes Disney tickets for free. It covers all your accommodations and all your food and drinks for up to 2 guests.
That's one of them. It sounds kind of nice. He sounds like a nice guy, doesn't he? But that actually goes to voicemail. Somehow they found a way to get past that voicemail beep. Joining us this morning is Aaron Foss of Nomo Robo. And this is one of the pieces of technology that's out there that's helping kill robocalls. Aaron, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
I was surprised to read that in May, And correct me if I'm wrong here, but it was something like 4 billion or 2 billion robocalls in the U.S. to phones?
Yeah, at least. The number that I saw from last month was over 10 billion calls made, of these robocalls made in the United States.
And the Midwest, Chicago is one of the top area codes that seem to be getting a lot of these robocalls. Is there an explosion here of these? What's happening with all of these calls?
Yeah, absolutely. And according to our data, we're seeing over 40% of all calls that are made in the United States are these illegal, unwanted robocalls. This problem really is getting to be an epidemic.
Yeah, an epidemic, even and it seems like the robocallers are adapting too. It used to be if you had voicemail, the computer or whatever it was would recognize that and just hang up. Now they leave a message on your voicemail.
Yeah, and especially the one that you played, if you actually listen to the whole thing, there's some sort of voice recognition where in the end it actually asks you, it says, you know, so are you interested in this? And let me just get your credit card number. And then, you know, it waits. And of course, on that one, it said, okay, well, we'll call you back later. And of course, they call you back two, three, four times a day. And it always happens to be at dinner time. They know how to annoy you.
There is more of these offenders than not, but even if you get on the FTC's do not call list, I've been on that for years, you still get these calls. That's all I get on my landline, which I keep for emergency situations. So tell me how Noma Robo helps.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear that all the time. The number one piece is, well, I'm on the do not call list, but these robocalls keep calling. And what I like to tell people is, you know, do not call list was created to solve a different problem. I mean, that came out in the early 2000s. The government was working on it in the mid-90s, right? This is just as the internet was coming. It just is a tool that doesn't work anymore. The legitimate companies will go and respect it, but all of these other, these cruise scams, these credit card scams, and so now what we need is technology like Noma Robo. And so Noma Robo is free for landlines. We just launched our mobile version. There's a free 14-day trial. And basically what we do is we're looking at all of these calls across hundreds of thousands of users, and we can very, very quickly tell when one of these robocallers starts a new attack. And what you were talking about before, it's called spoofing, right? They'll change their number. The number might look like it's coming from Chicago or from New York or, you know, even in your same area code and exchange. So Noma Robo is able to detect that. We jump in and answer the call for you or on the landline side. On the mobile side, we pop up a little screen that says robocaller so that you know not to answer it.
We're on the phone this morning with Aaron Foss from Noma Robo. We're going to get into the nuts and bolts of this because I'm curious how this works and how it's expanding and what the governments are doing, what our governments are doing about this as our conversation continues this morning on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Privacy fans, cover your ears. I'm about to say a dirty word. Robocalls. You know, recorded phone calls that invade your space, interrupt your dinners, offer you free trips to wherever. Mostly illegal.
It is Noma Robo. We're on with Aaron Foss, who is the head of this company out front in this battle against these robocalls. And Aaron, before the break, we were talking about how this software, how your product works, how this product works. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of that, I still am surprised that the FCC voted, I believe it was 3-2, to allow software products like yours to work. And the phone companies have been blocking this. I have to wonder who's on our side.
Yeah, you know what? So I got involved with this about 3 years ago because the FTC ran what they called the Robocall Challenge. And they basically posed the same question that you just said. Hey, everything that we do isn't working. Can anybody out there solve this for us? And they were really hoping that a bunch of people would come with different eyes. And it actually did work. You know, the government is doing what they can on the on the regulation side. The carriers are still fighting tooth and nail. I advocated with the FCC last year to get them to clarify their rules. And as you mentioned, you know, last summer they did that. The tide is definitely turning. The carriers that have been much more open to working with Noma Robo, with other companies. And I think we're in the second half of this story. I think that the humans are finally going to be winning this battle.
Well, let's hope so. So tell me, how does your technology work? Does it just recognize a phone number? Is it something that we program into the technology, or how does it work, the nuts and bolts?
Yeah, It's completely automatic, and that's actually the big advantage is a lot of advice is to, you know, if you get one of these calls, just block it. But the way the robocalls work, they change their number every couple of hours. So we've set up, this was actually why I won the competition, I wrote an algorithm that can go and detect these high-frequency calling patterns very, very quickly. So basically we have all of this data that's coming in. We built what's called a honeypot, which is actually over a quarter of a million numbers that used to belong to people, and they got rid of them because they were so overrun with robocalls that they couldn't even use them as a regular phone. But for the algorithm, it just chomps on all of that data. And then finally, at the end, is only where the humans need to come in and kind of tweak it, because it's not perfect. You know, some of them do slip through, and we also have to make sure that we're not blocking the good robocalls. So police, fire, schools. So we have what's called a whitelist on that end, so that the we can let the good ones through. And it's been working now again for 3 years, and everybody is just incredibly happy with it. I get nonstop emails with people saying, just thank you for bringing peace and quiet back to our home.
It's interesting because the one that I get the most, and I'm sure others who are listening in the Chicago area will relate to this, is one about electrical service. And there's another that claims to be related to one of our utilities here. And they say they can't. I've asked them to remove me many times. They say they can't because they're part of a public utility or some public policy thing. But they keep changing their number as I block them. That can't be. They can't be on the legit, right?
Correct. And that's the thing, too, is everybody always says to me, well, isn't this illegal? Yeah, absolutely. The problem is that because of the way the technology works, you know, the dialer, that computer that's making these calls can be anywhere in the world. When you get that message and you push, you know, 1 or 9 to get off the list or anything, your call can be routed to any call center anywhere in the world. The one, the IRS scam, that's the one that is usually going overseas. You know, I hear from people all the time, they're like, oh, you know, I pushed 1 and then I messed around with the guy, or I played a whistle in his ear or anything, and you know, they get a kick out of it. But actually what's happening is they're making the problem worse for themselves, because once these robocallers know that they kind of have somebody that's a real phone number, they just start incessantly calling it. And so really, you know, the advice of not to answer those calls is really, you know, the second best advice behind getting No More Robo.
Yeah, and then the other part of this is, you know, the government, as much as you have been cooperating with them, have been complacent, because one of the worst things are political season calls where they're just nonstop, and those are exempt, apparently, from rules.
Hey, Steve, don't worry. The politicians always wind up carving out, you know, making it good for them. So, yeah, they're allowed to. You know, the politicians, they've also made an exemption for charities. But at least on my end, right, the No More Robo users don't want to get any automated calls, right? And even though they say, you know what, email me, that's fine, because you can just click the delete button. But yeah, effectively for and on the No More Robo side, unless it's a human that they know or it's something that they want, you know, so say their doctor's office is calling to remind them about an upcoming appointment, you know, they don't want to get these political ones. The charities are also really interesting too, because there's so many of these charities that are effectively scams, right? They're legal, they're right on the edge, but only a very, very small percentage of the money that they raise goes to helping good causes. So, you know, we call ourselves an editorial service. We make editorial decisions on things, and those we stop from reaching consumers.
The other part of this, I've heard so many people say, this is why I got rid of my landline, is because I was sick of robocalls. The problem is, this is now an iOS, it's now of Android, it's now mobile phone-based, more of those calls than ever before, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And what's really interesting too is I hear from a lot of millennials, like some of the younger people, and they, you know, they say that they're getting hammered hard on their mobile phones for student loan reductions, credit card reductions, and the answer is because it works, right? How else are you going to go and scam people? You have to go to where they are, and especially, you know, again with college debt, you know, skyrocketing, so they're going now and trying to take advantage of younger folks on the landline side. The scams, you know, besides the ones that we've spoken about, are the fake medic alert scams and things that are targeting the elderly and the disabled. And that's the thing, you know, we laugh about some of these messages and we're making jokes of talking to the robots and everything, but there is literally billions of dollars that is scammed from people that just can't afford it every single year. You know, the FTC puts out data that just shows that this problem is huge, because the anybody can reach out and scam you through your phone. There's no protection. As you say, they're moving over to mobile. And finally, Apple just last week in their developer conference announced that they're going to, you can now write apps that, like NoMoRobo, that are going to be able to block it. We're a little bit ahead of the curve of everybody. But come in the fall, there's going to be a lot of other competition. And as I said before, we're going to finally start to win this problem and win this battle.
And how is that going to affect you? How is this advancement from iOS 10 going to impact NoMoRobo? Will you still be exist, or how will you work into that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the standard one, a rising tide lifts all boats, right? Everybody in this space, and there's a Wall Street Journal article that came out today that quotes me. A couple of other companies, there's one called Hiya, from White Pages and things. And listen, this is another one called Privacy Star, also really good guys who are fighting this fight. It's going to make it easier for us to provide our data to users. And again, everybody who's listening to my voice, right, they don't really care how we do it. All that they want to know is that the phone is ringing, it's somebody that they know. They don't want to get bugged by robocalls. And so now finally, again, the carriers are helping out. Apple, Android, the handset manufacturers are hanging out. And then companies like myself are doing our job to basically go and protect everyone in the country.
It's nice also to see the kind of institute in place, or the sort of the foundation in place that forced this, that encouraged your technology to come about. We should have more of this, where the government says to industry, hey, we've got this problem, fix it. And I bet we could come up with a lot of solutions like yours.
I'll tell you, and again, obviously I'm biased here because it was great, but that robocall challenge that I was talking about, I didn't know what a robocall was. I never got any of these. I thought it was a very, very interesting problem to solve, and also that they put up a $50,000 prize, and that was a really, really great incentive. 800 people entered that, and they picked me and another guy as the winner. We've never heard from him again, but I was able to take that $25,000, commercialize it, get it out to the public, and really start changing the nature of this game, right? The government's doing what they can, but then you have a guy like me in private industry who's, pushing out the product, talking to people like yourself, and this is the way that I see government really working really, really well in this combination of public and private, tries.
Aaron Foster, the company's NoMoRobo. You can find them on Twitter at NoMoRobo at NoMoRobo.com. And we don't just pick these things out of the air, by the way. Consumer Reports has you ranked, I believe, second or third as a buy. Highly recommended by Consumer Reports. Aaron, thanks for getting up and being on the opening bell this morning.
Hey, no problem. Thank you. Take it easy.
From ABC News Tech Trends, a new app promises to help you explore big cities in a brand new way. It's called Detour, an iPhone app designed to create a cinematic walking experience to transport listeners to a different time, says CEO Andrew Mason.
You just put your phone in your pocket and the narrator guides you along a path, almost like you're in the movie Her, and waits for you as you walk and tells you exactly where to go and where to look as you go.
As you might have guessed, Detour uses your phone's GPS tracking to guide you as you walk, and it can be a social experience.
You can sync with friends, and you can both listen to the same thing at the same time.
Detours are narrated by locals who know the city inside and out. It's a completely new way of storytelling as you're guided through tales of art, architecture, food, music, and more. The app is free to download, and individual tours start at $5. Tours for some larger cities are offered in bundles. With Tech Trends, I'm Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's one of the coolest things about kids, the unknown, the potential, the chance to do or become whatever they can imagine. But what if something happens during childhood that stops them from reaching that potential?
It is a public service message from a group called Safe Kids. And the push this week as we head into the 4th of July weekends, keeping our kids safe from drowning, as lots of us will be headed to places where their water pools are open for the summer. It is a big push by Safe Kids Worldwide, and we're happy this morning to have with us the president and CEO of the organization, Kate Carr. Kate, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, and thanks for having me on.
Well, we're so happy that you're here because this kids are our biggest natural resource, national resource. If anybody tells you otherwise, they're lying. And this is always the time of year where we're hearing just these horrible stories of children still drowning, either at home in pools or, God forbid, on a vacation. What is your organization doing each year to keep these kids safe? What are the stats?
Well, when it comes to overall injuries, we're really trying to prevent terrible things from happening. Kids want to get, they're going to get bumps and bruises, but if we add a couple layers of protection, we can keep kids safe. And that's where we want to flip drowning to water safety. And we've got a couple of ideas of how to do that.
What are the top couple of them? Because, you know, as kids, we were always told, you know, sort of the basic stuff, don't go into the water 20 minutes after you eat, make sure there's an adult nearby. But it really goes beyond that, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. With support from Nationwide and their Make Safe Happen campaign, we interviewed more than 1,000 parents to get at some of the common and very persistent misconceptions about drowning. And the first one we heard, nearly half of parents surveyed thought that if their child was drowning nearby, that they would hear them. Well, the reality is that drowning is silent. They're particularly for younger children who are completely submerged. Their head is underwater. They're not going to scream that way. Very little splashing, very little waving of arms. It's really quiet. And so we need to emphasize, keep your eyes on kids when they're in water.
And it's almost, you almost have to be right next to them, watching them like a hawk, don't you?
Well, especially for our younger kids, we recommend that you be within arm's reach. And, you know, I'm a mom of three, and my kids are older, but I remember how challenging that was with more than one child. But you really need to be there, and you need to be actively supervising, not on your cell phone, you know, not scanning your social media, not chatting with someone and diverting your attention. You need to be there and actively supervising.
And before the children get into the pool, is it a good idea, too, to have them go through swimming classes and swimming courses, at least some sort of instruction?
You know, learning how to swim is something that we just consider an essential skill. But we have to remember that swim level varies, both with time, with experience. And so get your children into water as soon as you feel that they will be comfortable in water. And make sure you understand what their skill level is like. You know, Steve, it was surprising to me that our data, and this is national data that we looked at, 47% of kids who were 10 to 17 knew how to swim. So it's not just knowing how to swim, it's also survival in the water. And there are some tips that we have for water survival.
Let's go through a couple of those, because I think it's important that we hit as many of them as we can as people are getting ready to pack up their beach gear and head off for the holiday.
Exactly. And these are good for, you know, as I like to say, children of all ages. And they come from the American Red Cross. People should know, and especially kids, how to step in or jump into water that's over their head, how to return to the surface and float or tread water for at least 1 minute, how to turn around in a full circle, not get disoriented, and find an exit, how to swim at least 25 yards to an exit. And that's a pretty substantial distance, especially for a younger child. And finally, how to get out of the water, whether it's a pool where you want to be able to exit without a ladder, or even if you're thinking in the surf, it can be challenging sometimes coming out of water. So all of these, this is a simple tip that parents can check their kids as they're in the water this coming weekend over 4th of July.
The other thing, too, is people, parents, us, anybody that has children, with me, with my nieces, I just, even when there's a lifeguard on duty, does that lull people into sort of a false sense of security?
I think that it does. More than half of the parents we surveyed thought that if a lifeguard was present, it was their job to supervise their child. But in reality, a lifeguard's job is to enforce the rules, whether they're in a pool or near an open body of water, to scan, to rescue, to resuscitate, but not to be the supervisor of each child that's in front of them. That's a parent or a caregiver's responsibility.
Also, are there other bodies of water that are more dangerous than others? Like, for instance, is a pool more dangerous than a beach, than Lake Michigan, than the ocean?
Well, we took a look at data from Illinois, and you know, Illinois has, relatively speaking, a large number of fatalities from drowning for kids. 29 children who in 2014, the last year that we had data, succumbed to drowning. And the numbers on pools and natural bodies of water and everything that is lumped under natural are relatively close, 9 and 10. 9 for pools, 10 for natural bodies of water, and that's looking at 10 years of data on average. So the risks are really high, but I don't want to lose sight of the fact that children under the age of 1 drown in bathtubs or buckets of water. Anything that has an inch of water in the home is a danger to our youngest children.
You can head to safekids.org to see more of these safety tips and other information. As we head off, is there, I guess, CPR, learning CPR, God forbid, the worst case scenario, parents should know how to do that. They should maybe know basic rescue skills, too.
Well, CPR is going to be very helpful, particularly if there's a near fatal drowning, the ability to start CPR right away before emergency responders arrive on the scene could just save a life. And that skill could be helpful in a variety of different settings. The other tip that we have is a water watcher card. And that means that if you're at a party, whether it's this weekend or any time, designate someone to be the water watcher. We have some tips. That's why you can download our card at safekids.org. But someone always takes a 15-minute shift to have their eyes ever present on the kids in and around water. And it's a great tip as we head into a holiday weekend.
We've been focusing a lot here on drowning and water, but this is also a big weekend for fireworks and other things that go boom. Children also are, a lot of children are injured this way every year, too. What advice do you have in this area?
Well, believe it or not, overall in the U.S., more than 3,000 kids under the age of 15 were seen in emergency rooms last year because of fireworks. And a lot of them are burns from sparklers. Sparklers burn at 1,200 degrees. Imagine that. And we put them into the hands of toddlers. And then, of course, fireworks, because the fireworks can explode in a child's hands. They can cause burns. I love fireworks. I love fireworks that aren't going off in my backyard, but a public firework display where it's brilliant and wonderful. And instead of a sparkler, they're lovely. But instead of a sparkler, think of a glow stick.
The other thing that you mentioned early on that I want to go back to is this notion of parents, and this happens to all of us, where we're on our smartphones, not paying attention to the world around us, and sometimes that includes our children. This cannot be hit enough, right? Put the phone down, pay attention.
You know, it is a distraction, it is a temptation, but let's remember that we're there to have a really great time with our kids. And yes, I understand that you might need a cell phone for emergencies, but maybe the social media, maybe the chats that aren't absolutely an emergency can just wait and enjoy the moment. Instead of being on your cell phone by the pool, get in the pool with your kids. You know, go have fun, live in the moment and have fun, and perhaps let your cell phone give it a vacation while you're on vacation.
Kate, thank you for being with us today. We hate to be sort of the Debbie Downer going to the weekend, but I think it's important to get this message out to make sure people have the information. A safe weekend is a happy weekend We certainly want this to be a happy 4th of July. We know your effort is kicking off today with this water safety information and the holiday for a holiday.
Sasha, you are absolutely right.
I think that's more of your PSA there. But thank you, and we appreciate your work, and we'll keep posted, and people can find you at Safe Kids CEO, and also the organization can be found at Safe Kids, and Kate Carr is the CEO. Have a wonderful 4th of July weekend. Thanks for keeping our kids safe.
Thanks for having me on, and we can make it a happy and a safe holiday for everyone. Thanks so much.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is 5:50 on the WGN Market Desk. The Dow futures up 102 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures up as well, almost 8%. Pre-trade, pre-market. Let's get the latest on commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As I look at grain market headlines yesterday, this is what I see. Soybean futures rise, corn flat, and wheat weak. At the end of the day yesterday, though, soybeans showed a pretty good gain of 17¾ cents a bushel, while December corn and July corn ended the day unchanged, and wheat was down slightly, the July contract down 3¾ cents. And the crop condition reports really didn't make a difference in trading on the market yesterday. Taking a look at livestock, fairly quiet trading day there at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, but at least a green screen. October lean hogs up 82 cents for the day. They'll start today at $71.95. August live cattle up 65, starting today at $112.67 a hundredweight. And the August feeder cattle contract gained 55 cents yesterday at $140.72 a hundredweight. Couple of other things to note. Friday is the day the Vermont food labeling law goes into effect, and there is that bipartisan bill back in Congress. Hopefully it will pass both houses and get signed before that July 1st implementation of their own food labeling bill in Vermont. Illinois Farm Bureau, the latest organization to call for passage of that bill. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Have a good day as well. A couple of other notes on the business news desk this morning. Some Facebook users looking for something to do in real life can now get suggestions from their social network. Facebook has been putting together lists of things to do in the U.S., in U.S. cities, with the help, with the goal of keeping users in touch with each other and knowing where these things are. It's rolling out in several cities, major cities, right off the bat, and Chicago's one of those. Chicago, Boston, Dallas, Houston, Los Angeles, Miami, New York, San Francisco, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. Sounds a little bit like something that we profiled a week or so ago, Click, the app. So that, again, lists of things to do, not necessarily finding clicks of people, but these lists are apparently becoming even more popular on social media. Six Flags Entertainment Corporation has announced it's in discussions with Saudi Arabia to pursue an amusement park there. It's an ultra-conservative country, and so it's going to be interesting to see how those talks unravel or unfold as we move forward on those. Again, the market calendar for today, just a couple of big things we need to watch out for. Just ahead, the U.S. Commerce Department releases personal income and spending numbers. U.S. Consumer spending posted a big gain yesterday. We saw some GDP numbers. And also today, the National Association of Realtors releases its pending home sales for May. We'll be watching both of those and watching your money as we move through the morning. The Steve Cochran Show up next, and we will be back bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock with another edition of The Opening Bell. Our show's producer is Mary Sandberg, assistant producer is Bennett Wakenight, and our engineer is Ben Cortez.